The goal of the lecture, I mean, the goal of the lecture of today and Tuesday, is to continue the analysis of conjugate gradient methods, which you started with Professor Bevilacqua. Professor Bevilacqua showed you this method to solve a sphere linear system in which the matrix A is symmetric and positive definite. Okay? And indeed, what we did is to apply indirectly an optimization algorithm. Okay? So, today I have two aims. The first one is to revise this method showing you the optimization aspects, okay, in depth of this method. And the other is to try to extend this method to a generic optimization problem. Indeed, this method, and I think Professor Bevilacqua told you, is a method for minimizing this quadratic function, which is filled with the data of the linear system. Okay? This is a quadratic function. The matrix A is positive definite, so this quadratic function is strictly convex. Okay? So, indeed, this is a method to minimize a strictly convex quadratic function. Indeed, the gradient of this function is nothing else but ax minus b. And indeed, the stationary points are the solutions of the linear system. Since the function is convex, stationary points are exactly mean. Okay. Oh, I use the word stationary points and minima, but since the function is strictly convex, there exists a unique minimum of the function, and indeed there exists a unique solution of the linear system. Indeed, the matrix is positive semi-definite, so it is, no, sorry, it is positive definite, so it is invertible, so the system has a unique solution, which is actually this one, okay? The reason to use this method is to avoid the computation of the inverse of the matrix. Okay, so, first remark, which will be a guideline somehow. In the algorithm here you have a quantity which is called residual, which has been used by Professor Bevilacqua in his argument, but notice that the residual at iteration k is nothing else than minus the gradient of f at x k. Okay? So, let's keep this in mind. What is the difference this algorithm has with a standard gradient type method? Or let's say with the steepest descent method, okay? For instance, with the inexact term. The difference lies here in the choice of the direction. Okay? At the very first iteration, you take the steepest descent direction at the initial point. Okay? So the first iteration is nothing else than a step of the steepest descent method. Okay? Iteration 1 is exactly the same you perform in the gradient method. Okay? In the steepest descent method. At the next, oh sorry, here is k minus 1. At the other iterations, you don't take the steepest descent direction, but you modify adding a term which depends on the previous direction, okay? Which in turn depends on the direction of the previous iterations and so on. So the direction keeps track of the of all the previous directions. Okay? So you are modifying the steepest descent by keeping track of the previous direction. Okay? With this coefficient beta k. Okay? And now I'll try to address you how this beta k has been chosen. Okay. Professor Bevilacqua proved you a few properties of this method. I will rewrite them. First property is that receiver RK is orthogonal to all previous receivers RJs. Second property is this relationship between the direction and the matrix A. Direction dk is orthogonal not to the previous directions, but to the previous direction which has been transformed through matrix A. Okay? And this is what is called conjugacy. Okay? Conjugate comes from here. In the gradient method, he had that each direction, in the steepest descent method with a grad search, you have that each direction is orthogonal to the previous one. Here you have this conjugacy property. Third property we have is that also the receiver RK is orthogonal to the previous directions. And then a property which I don't think I will use, but allows to, for instance, simplify computations, and it is that dk transpose R0 is equivalent to the norm, to the square of the norm of RK. Okay. Clearly, all this property require an assumption that all the residuals up to RK minus 1 are non-zero. Okay? Because if one of them is zero, you stop the algorithm and you don't even need properties. Okay? So this under the assumption that R0, R1, RK minus 1 are all different from 0. And this holds for anything. Okay? Let's see how this property relates to optimization. This property, the third one, provides us descent. It's telling us that this is a descent method. Okay? This is a descent method for the minimization of f. So, what are we supposed to check? We are supposed to check that at each iteration k, the star product between the gradient of f at the point and the direction is negative. Okay? But this is easy because the gradient is minus RK. So this is this color graph. Okay? Then you replace to dk this formula, this expression. Okay? So you replace dk with rk plus beta times dk minus 1. Okay? So this is equal to minus rk times itself plus beta k times rk times dk minus 1. Okay? Just to be short, by times I mean the scalar product. Okay? I distribute it, use the distributive property. Okay. Assumption 3, property 3 is telling us that this quantity is 0. So this is minus rk times rk, which is minus the norm of rk squared, which is negative unless rk is 0. Okay? If rk is 0, we stop. Otherwise, the direction is the same direction. Okay? So, this algorithm falls within the scheme we had for gradient methods. Okay? Where? Yes. It should be minus, but it doesn't affect the computation because it is true. Okay, but it is minus, you're right. Well, the other thing is the choice, relevant issue is the choice of the step size, tk, here. First, notice that this is positive because this is the square of the norm, so it's positive, and the denominator is positive since a is positive there. So this quantity is positive as well. We have a formula. We did not generally have a formula for exact line search, except the case in which the function is parabolic. And this is indeed the case we are in. Okay? The function is quadratic. But I will show it to you again. We had a formula and we proved that formula. Okay? Indeed, the step size comes from that formula. Okay? But I will show you directly. How do we choose the step size in exact line search? Okay? We minimize the search function. So the search function is nothing else than the function of e which provides the value of x at xk plus t times tk. Okay? And we do know that the exact line search is the positive value of tk such that the derivative of this function is 0. Okay? Well, we also know, we have used it a few times, that this derivative is the gradient of x at xk plus t times dk times dk. Okay? Well, dk. We want to see if this is 0. Okay? So we simply substitute and exploit these properties. Okay? Substitute, we know that the gradient is this quantity. So this is A xk plus pk times A dk minus B. Okay? Times the direction. Now, this quantity here is minus fk. So this can be written as pk times a dk minus fk times dk. Which is, you distribute the scalar product, you get dk transpose, A transpose, which is equal to A dk minus RK transpose D dk. Okay? We already computed. It's on the blackboard above. Okay? This quantity is equal to this minus is equal to this star. So here we can replace. It is exactly the same step. The same steps we had there, we can replace it by RK times RK. Okay? But now check how PK is defined. It's defined this way. So that if you substitute here, the denominator erases this, and here you're left exactly with this. So this is zero. This is zero because you choose TK in such a way that this is zero. Okay? So actually this choice here is made by this computation here. Okay? So this is the exact line search. So we are doing a method with exact line search, but a direction which is different from the steepest descent direction. Professor De Villacqua showed you that this modification, in theory, provides a method which achieves convergence in a finite number of iterations. Okay? He proved you that at most after n iterations, you find the solution. Okay? At most if R0, R1, RK, n minus 1, are non-zero, then Rn minus 1 is 0. Okay? Why is that? Well, because each residual is orthogonal to all the previous ones. Okay? So, R0 and R1 are linearly independent. Okay? Then you have R2, which is orthogonal to both. So it cannot be a linear combination of them. So it's non-zero. And you keep going on, and so it is linearly independent with them. So the three are linearly independent. And so on, you prove that all the sequence is made by linearly independent vectors. Okay? But when you have, okay, I made it. When you have, when you arrive at n minus 1, you have n linearly independent vectors, so that when you arrive to Rn, this should be linearly independent with all the others, but this is not possible because the dimension of the space is n, so it must be zero. The only possibility is that it is zero. Okay? So this is the way Professor De Villacqua proved you finite convergence. And he also, I think he discussed with you the fact that this is in theory, while in practical numerical errors do not allow to achieve exactly convergence in at most n iterations. So that the method is actually used in an iterative way. Okay. I want to prove you this property once again. The algorithm stops after a finite number of iterations, but in a different fashion, through optimization. Okay? And I need one of these properties as my main tool. My main tool is this property. Can you get it? Well, I want to show you that not only the sequence of residuals is made by linearly independent vectors, but also that the sequence of directions is made by linearly independent vectors. And then I will use this to prove a property, which is based, which is an optimization property, and it has a finite convergence as an obvious consequence. Okay. So, okay, I want to show you that D0, D1. Dk are linearly independent, okay, for any k. Okay, we make it by induction, okay? For k equals zero, this is obvious. Okay, you just have one vector, so it is linearly independent. Now we suppose that the first k are linearly independent, so from 0 to k minus 1, and we want to prove that if we add dk, we still get a set of linearly independent vectors. Okay? Well, let's suppose, on the contrary, that dk can be written as a linear combination of d0, d1, dk minus 1 with appropriate suitable coefficients lambda gamma 0, gamma 1, lambda k minus 1. Okay? Well, let's try to compute this quantity. Okay. So, just replace this one by this expression. Okay, and keep this fixed. What you get is gamma 0 dk transpose a d0 plus gamma 1 d1 transpose a d1 plus
Gamma k minus 1 dk transpose a dk minus 1.
Okay? You just substituted this expression here. Now we exploit this property. All these quantities are zero. This is zero, this is zero, this is zero. So, this is zero. Okay? So we find out that dk transpose a dk is zero. But, a is positive definite. So, this is possible if and only if dk is zero.
So, dk has to be zero.
Okay? But if dk is zero, okay,
you have that the zero, the one, dk minus one are inertially dependent.
Okay, because you can write a combination of them with non-zero coefficients. So you get a contradiction. Okay? Unless clearly you get a contradiction, or if you want to reason in another way, all these coefficients have to be zero. Okay? Which would mean that dk is zero, which is not. Okay? So we prove that these are linearly independent. I want to use this property. I want to show you that the sequence xk generated by the algorithm has a very nice property, which is related to these directions. Okay? So, let's call fk the linear subspace of Rn, the linear subspace generated by d0, d1, d2, dk minus 1. Oh, yeah. Okay, so it means,
let me see, no, let's go up to dk.
For k equals 0,
this is d0, this is just the line, okay, of direction d0. Then you have d1. Okay, and F1 is the space generated by these two vectors, so is the plane, okay, in the n-dimensional space, is this plane. Then you have a third direction here, so F2 is the three-dimensional subspace generated by these three vectors in a row, and so on. I'm generating a sequence of subspaces which are nested one into the other.
Okay. First I have the line, then I have the plane, then I have a three-dimensional subspace which contains the plane, and so on. Okay. So that, in the end,
Fn minus 1, also the other name was better, is necessarily the full space Rn.
Okay? The property I want to prove you is the following.
The sequence Fk generated by
the conjugate gradient method
has this property. It is made by points which minimize function f over this subspace. Okay? You take the subspace Fa and you translate it by x0, the starting point. Okay? So it means that the point direction I minimize f over a one-dimensional subspace. And the second iteration, I minimize f over a plane. And the first iteration, I minimize for the three-dimensional subspace. Okay? So it means that at the first iteration, I'm actually minimizing the function here, then here, then here, then here, and at the last iteration, on the full space, so that we are done and the algorithm stops. Okay. So this is another way to see the finite convergence. Okay. You are minimizing the function over a sequence of nested affine subspace which invades the full space in n iterations. Okay. I don't want to bother you with the details of the proof. You find it two different proofs on my lecture notes. Okay. I just give you the idea because it's interesting. Okay. And then you can dig the details by your own. Which belongs to this affine subspace can be written in the following way: x0 plus alpha 0 times v0 plus alpha 1 times v1 and so on. Okay. For suitable coefficients alpha 0, alpha 1, alpha k minus 1. Okay? There is a one-to-one correspondence between these coefficients and the point of the subspace. Okay? This subspace is described by points which are done this way, for all possible values of the coefficients. Okay? So, if I write this C function of alpha 0, alpha 1, alpha k minus 1, which is f computed in this point, okay, then we check. Okay. This is exactly the same thing to minimize phi sorry, of this coefficient over over array.
I will check your question.
The point is the following, okay? This point can be described in this way. So actually I can describe my feasible region by these parameters, which are not constrained. Can take any value. So this constrained problem can be rewritten as this unconstrained problem. Okay? And the trick is here. Since it is an unconstrained problem, we know optimality conditions. Since f is strictly convex, you can prove that this function is strictly convex as well. And so optimality is characterized by the fact that the gradient is here. Okay? You compute the gradient, and you will find that the minimum point is this one. Okay? And how do you find it? Because xk is xk minus 1 plus dk minus 1 dk minus 1, and then you substitute the definition of the direction, and you find out that it is a combination of d0, d1, dk minus 1. So, I answer your question. I think that... Okay, so... xk is a combination of d0 up to dk minus... Sorry. Xk is a combination of... up to k minus 1, so here I should drop a bit. No, okay. Sorry. This is the best way to do it. Okay? Just shift the index. Thank you for pointing out this point. But I don't want to bother you with the proof. I just want to... you to appreciate this trick. Sometimes you can have a parametric description of your feasible region, which is not the full space, and the parameters are free, okay, are not constrained. In that case, you can reduce your problem to an unconstrained problem, okay, even if the problem is constrained, okay. But you need to have such a description of the feasible region. Okay? In this case, it is available because we have the direction, so we know how the region is done. Okay? It's a linear subspace, so you know that it depends on the coefficients of the generators of the subspace. Okay? In the lecture notes, you find two proofs. Because one relies mainly on this idea and the computation of the gradient of this function. Okay. The other one is making it by hand. It's making it by hand. Since f is this function here, okay, here you substitute, okay, and you find out the specific formula for this function, and you see that minimizing this function is easy because it is the sum of parabolas, each one depending only on one of these coefficients. So you minimize each of them separately. Okay? But I don't want to, you can read the details on the lecture notes. Okay? This is the important thing. How you reduce a constrained problem to an unconstrained problem when you have a nice, very nice description of the feasible region. Okay? At almost the end of the second semester, we will see such a case. Okay? A working case. Okay, so this is the last thing I want to remind you about this conjugate gradient method. So, it is a method
to solve a linear system, which is equivalent to the minimization of a strictly convex function.
The idea is to change the steepest descent direction by keeping track of the previous directions, and you can perform exact line search.
Okay? And in theory, these methods converge in a finite number of iterations,
since it is a method that at each iteration minimizes
the function on a subspace which include the previous one. Okay? So that the subspaces are nested and they invade the full space.
Okay, so
now we take a break, and after the break I will try to answer the question, okay, can we apply these ideas if our function is not strictly convex, but a generic nonlinear function?